Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome. Welcome indeed to book, chapter, and verse 120 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio exclusively right here on the listener-supported Head-On Radio Network. Also brought to you by Coal River Mountain Watch. That's crmw.net. Please stop by crmw.net and visit the good folks over at Coal River Mountain Watch. We'll be glad you did. We appreciate their support. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Thursday, February 28, 2008. So if you're listening shortly after 9 p.m. Eastern Time on a Thursday evening, that is February the 28th, you are indeed listening to a live show, and you are more than welcome to call in and talk to myself and to the guest whom I'll be introducing shortly. I'll be giving out those telephone numbers in just a moment. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there you're going to find links to all of the guests as well as to the guest sites and to the guest audio archives if you've missed a show that you'd like to hear. You'll find links to the chat room, which is active as I speak. And as with all of the Head-On Radio Network programming, the chat room is an integrated part. It's integral to the shows. You are indeed missing a lot if you are not in our chat room. If you are listening on a replay stream or one of the audio archives, of course, you're not able to get in the chat room, but we appreciate your listening just the same. At strictlyconfidentialradio.com, you're going to find links to the main Head-On Radio Network site. And there you'll find information about all of the other progressive programming on the Head-On Radio Network, of which I'm only a very small part and very proud to be a part. You'll find links at strictlyconfidentialradio.com also for the MySpace page and links to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. We're missing Bob this evening. We hope that he is back soon. Bob is involved in a meeting that are prearranged introduction. He'll tell us about it, no doubt, on the horn section, which will be following Strictly Confidential. So it's always a surprise. When Bob's show runs, of course, I'm listening to the audio of Bob's show in my headphones, and then Bob's show fades out, and Strictly Confidential theme begins running. However, when Bob is not there, I'm listening to Total Silence, and all of a sudden, bang, here comes the theme song. It's always quite a little shock when Strictly Confidential starts and you realize that you have come down to the last minute and down to the wire. It's always nice to have Bob there to sort of ease us in. I'm so pleased to have our guest this evening. Agnes is attempting to reach the guest now. Our guest is DJ Rick Ashman. I'm sorry, Ashman. Now, Rick is from Seattle, and lives in Seattle. Rick was introduced to us by way of our dear friend VJC, or Victor. You know Victor from having been on the show in the past, an amazing interview. It was back in November, I believe. If you click on the November calendar, you can go back and hear that. We also know Victor for the Gay Bar Across the Street segments that he has been doing. We asked him to send us in some new segments this evening because we've run low. They're very popular here, so we're glad to have Victor sending us some more Gay Bar Across the Street mix sets. And we'll probably have Victor back into the rotation next week. In fact, I'm sure we will if he has time to prepare some new tracks for us. And by the way, we have another new DJ who's going to be joining us in the Gay Bar Across the Street, which is Hank Steinhauer from Miami. And Hank will actually begin tomorrow evening, I believe, we have him scheduled. But tonight we have a music guest, and this is Rick Ashman again. He also goes by DJ RXMX. If we are posting his site in the chat room, however, if you're not in chat, you can find him at djrxmx.multiply.com. Rick tells us that his programming and his musical interests began in 79, and he uses the phrase that he was blessed with the music of DJ Dana Andrews, and I fully understand that remark. A wonderful DJ can indeed be a blessing. They can lift you both spiritually and in energy. It's an amazing job that they do. Now, Dana Andrews was spinning records in Seattle at a place called The Monastery, which is an after-hours late-night club in Seattle. Interestingly enough, I was at The Monastery in the mid-70s. It was a visit to Seattle. Beautiful place, an old stone monastery, an actual church that had been converted. Just beautiful. The monastery had a reputation of being one of the best sound systems in the entire West Coast. The experience there was also wonderful. And Rick tells us that it was part of his inspiration to become involved with mixing music and DJing and his love for disco music. He attended college in 1984 to study drama and communications, and at that point in time took up some side work as a DJ at party events and nightclubs in Seattle. A couple of the Seattle clubs he played, which you may very well know, were Sparks and the Park Bench. Both had a disco and rhythm and blues format. And in the subsequent years following playing at the Sparks and the Park Bench, he was playing in the 80s. He continued to record mixed music sets and custom programming for special events. And he tells us that his love and inspiration for compiling these mixes comes to him from some of the pioneering DJs, which we have been fortunate enough to have on the show. Both DJ Bobby Vittoretti is one of his inspirations, and also Tom Moulton, in addition to Dana Andrews, who has passed, is not with us anymore, I'm sorry to say. And Rick tells us that those people have undoubtedly played a huge role in shaping his musical tastes and for generations of DJs to come. And Rick, we are indeed glad to have you on the show. Welcome to Strictly Confidential.
I'm glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you here, Rick. Rick, can you hear me okay?
You know, I can actually hear you quite good.
Excellent. If that changes, just let us know. The studio has plenty of knobs and dials and pedals that they can adjust to change anything if the volume changes. Rick, I'm just delighted to have you here. You come highly recommended by VJC, who's a dear friend of the program. And I should begin, Rick, by telling you a story. It's a little bit of I found it quite amusing. I hope you do too. When I first heard about you from VJC, and I, of course, went to your website and looked around at the website, and I saw the picture of the fellow named Rick, and I thought, for some reason in my mind, it clicked to me that you were probably 22, 25, something like that. So I've been telling people that we're going to have, internal people at the network that we're going to have this kid. We're going to have this kid coming. He's going to be, and, you know, he's just a kid. I don't know how he knows about all this music. And now I'm reading this today, and I realize that you were DJing in the 80s at exactly the same time I was DJing in 82 also in Portland, just south of you, Portland, Oregon. So, in fact, we were spinning music at the very same time in the very same neck of the woods. So my opening question to you, Rick, is how do you stay so young-looking? You just amaze me.
I don't know how to initially respond to that. I kind of take it as a compliment, I guess.
Well, it is a compliment.
Yeah, I'd say probably just a big smile, you know, probably kind of accentuates that a little bit. I don't know. Well, I can tell you in all honesty that I finally gave up the hard drug use in the late 80s. Just knowing that if I continued to do that I probably wouldn't look like that picture. You know, that you're looking at there. I don't know, for lack of better words. I you know, that's an interesting question, actually. that you asked that, because I would say another thing that certainly helps me to be youthful and to kind of think in a youthful way, in a spiritual way, is music. I think music has just been the panacea for, you know, just typical life's pains.
Well, that's well said, Rick. And so many of us spinning in the clubs back in those days were very involved with the drug scene. Of course, in the Pacific Northwest at the time, it was a lot of crystal going around, or meth. I'm not sure what other parts of the country were doing, but that's what we were doing a lot of, I recall it, in Portland. And that stuff eventually does make you a walking skeletal remain of a human being.
And, well said.
And thank God you got through this. Yes, and we've lost so many. It's funny. You can look back and laugh at it. But I think of, you know, when we were on the other side of it, when we were actually doing it. You know, we're very different people now, aren't we, Rick?
Oh, totally.
So, if I recall, I'm trying to recall the club called Sparks. Was that the huge club up there? There was like the DJ booth was like way up in the air, like in the glass booth. What was that club?
No. Sparks. Great question. Just a tiny little background on that. The monastery, which was located about 10 blocks up the street from kind of the more busier downtown section of Seattle, two blocks exact, actually one block away from the monastery was Sparks. And Sparks, before it had become Sparks, was actually called the Axl Rock.
Maybe that was it.
And the Axl Rock, as I said, it was one block away. A very, very interesting crowd that went there. And also a very interesting music format. The Axl Rock eventually was sold, and the name was changed on it to Sparks. And
I
that was in about 1983.
I was DJing in Portland in 83. Go ahead, please.
Yeah. And so Sparks was actually only a one-floor club and bar. So it didn't have multiple levels on it. So that's just a little bit of information on that. I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, it does. Those were wonderful years where you played what? I think I played from about 82 to about 87, 88, something in that. It was the early to mid-80s. Those were wonderful times.
Oh, totally.
Did you ever make it down to Portland? I'm wondering if you might have. I DJed at the Zoo and Ray's Ordinary and elsewhere. There's, you know, a long list of places.
Yeah, no, actually I didn't, because I was so hooked on you just couldn't take me away from the music from the monastery. It was that powerful of a place. And the people up in Seattle had become so spoiled on the music that Dana Andrews played, Peter. Also at that time too, my means were so limited. Because in the very, very early 80s, in the late 70s, my lifestyle was so ingrained in, you know, the ripping and running of drug use that I just had limited means, and I very rarely ever traveled, to be honest with you.
I understand.
However, the other thing that kind of triggers another response from what you just asked, there was a wonderful DJ that apparently came out of the Portland area, probably in addition to yourself. And his name was Scott. And I can't remember his last name. If you mention his last name, I would probably remember. But his first name was Scott. And he ended up coming up from Portland, where he originally played records, and he came up to the Seattle area. and played records. I just wish I could remember his last name.
Well, I would have known the DJs. I knew all of them. So he must have been playing in a slightly different time frame than I was. I wish I had known of him, though.
Yeah, he was quite good.
Yeah, and I point out too that I'm sorry to say I don't know Dana that well. You see, when I was visiting, I was only visiting Seattle in about 75. And went to the monastery one evening and was there several hours. I was, it was just amazing, just an amazing, astounding place. You're right, the sound system was incredible. It's entirely possible I heard him, but that was prior to my actually moving to Portland, so I really didn't know the people very well. But Dana, if I recall, was just one of the very much a pioneering DJs. He DJed during from the very beginning, did he not, from the 70s?
Yeah, that's a great question. Dana Andrews basically started playing at the monastery when the monastery opened doors, right around that time. And the monastery opened their doors, and talk about a wonderful year to open the doors. 1977 is when the monastery basically opened its doors, and that's when Dana Andrews started.
Yes, it does. And he was then had he still been with us today, he would no doubt be legend as so many of the other folks did, like the Tom Moultons and the Bobby Vitaretti's and the Larry Sanders, and the list goes on and on.
I strongly, strongly believe that because he had no problem finding work, including in British Columbia, in the Pacific Northwest region, because he had an amazing energy style. In other words, he had a style that without a doubt, like some of the other greats, the Tom Moultons, the Bobby Vinerettis, and some of the others, he had a style to keep you on the dance floor, and at times cry on the dance floor because of just his ability to take risks and put on not just the classic cuts, but to put on the more underground cuts, especially the stuff coming out of like Scandinavia and Italy and Germany and the UK and Canada.
Well, Rick, I understand about being moved to tears on a dance floor and by DJs, and but many of our listeners may not having had the opportunity to go to clubs with world-class stellar DJs that were not playing music just because it was in rotation, but playing music from the heart. And it was so far from what, your rotation on standard radio today that it could very well have been a different universe. Can you tell us about some of the feelings that you had and some of the, because you used the word blessed. I would like to explore that with you.
Sure. I will do my best on it. Before I say that, just as kind of a preface, the other part of your last question I meant to answer and I failed to answer that was just that I have no doubt that Dana Andrews would have been up there with some of the other great, great DJs had his life not been taken away from his lifestyle, and so unfortunately he got so sick that he lost, in my personal opinion, he lost his inspiration, skill, and ability to become better, if that makes sense. So
Yes, it does.
And he passed, of course. I have it on my website. It's around 1989 when he passed. But anyway, I just wanted to mention that. But and then as far as your next question, you're asking about. I might need you to rephrase it one more time. But
sure.
Sometimes spiritual inspiration.
Yes, very very much so. When people are moved to tears, it's It's not because they recognize the lyrics necessarily, or just because it's they're moved to tears by because the artist is so good looking or whatever. It's always comes from the heart, and I'm wondering about some of your experience. You've used the word that you were blessed to hear the music of DJ Dana Andrews, and I too have been blessed by the music of some of the DJs. I just wondered what your experiences was, or if you can give us a spiritual insight into Dana when he was really Dana and not a drug addicted man.
Yeah. Okay. I would say, like, one of the main things, because that's a wonderful question. I would say one of the things that really hit my emotions, being on the dance floor and dancing on the dance floor and being pulled out, if you will, you know, sitting on one of the bass cabinets at the monastery, because the dance floor was surrounded by bass cabinets, you know, and having this force, if you will, pull you off the bench or the bass cabinet and just put you on the dance floor. Dana, the thing about Dana that was fantastic is this is a guy that knew the crowd and could read the dynamic crowd, if you will. And with that said, when he was really in tune with reading the crowd, there were moments when he knew exactly what to play next and what song to play after that, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I think a DJ's ability to do that, to read the crowd, to take the risks, to play the masterpiece cuts at the right time, and all of that, I think is one of the things that triggers an emotional feeling, a kind of a spiritual feeling, if you will, to make it impossible to not want to dance and not be moved by the music that's coming at you. I'm just trying to think of...
Well, Rick, I have to...
say another thing that would, certainly for myself, that would hit me emotionally is just some of the artists back then were incredible. You know, just the singing, some of the singers in these groups, you know, they just... that the real artist came out, the creativity comes out, and so the music at that time, and this is just from my experience at that time, what I'm specifically thinking of, like 1979, 1980, 1981, that era, for some reason there seemed to be a real it just seemed like the production level of the recordings coming out at that time for the dance floors were incredible, just incredible, and that, you know, I mean, that kind of that translates to an amazing experience. So you're not just hearing electronics in the music, but you're also hearing real instruments being played, and you're hearing heartfelt and creative vocals being played, and fantastic lyrics being written into the songs. And it just seemed like that during that era in particular, I experienced a lot of that.
Well, Rick, that's probably the best I have ever heard it put before. That was beautifully said. We talked about Dana being able to read the dance floor, and in fact to weave a story using not his own words but the words of the artists and the words of the music. And it really becomes very much a heart thing. It's a gift, Rick. It is a gift that some people have to do that, and it's I don't think it can be taught, really. I don't think it can be taught. And I must say too about the using the real instruments. I don't, you know, it seems to me, I'm not trying to bash the music as it exists from an electronic form. Lord knows I'm knee deep in electronics right now, but it just seems to me that regardless of how accurately a synthesizer reproduces an instrument, somehow the soul just isn't there. I have a hard time putting my finger on it. And Rick, I must say too, I have listened to some of your mixes, some of the music that you have sent in for us to listen to this evening, And Rick, I would venture to say that you have that gift also. Even not in the context of being in a crowd and being moved by the crowd, even in the context of my being alone in the room with all the computers and stuff going, I have been. You really have an uncanny ability to weave music together, and I've noticed that you're able to pull from a very wide time frame. Some of this stuff it just blows me away. I wanted you to know that I really really do respect what you do. Tell us about your family. I mean, were you from a musical family? How did you learn to whisper with this voice? And I say whisper in the spiritual sense.
Wow. Well, I'll start by saying that, and you probably chuckle at this a little bit, but I remember when I was about 5 years old, being in my brother's room in our house, and I had never really heard music before. I don't really start remembering music until I was about 4 or 5 years old, and I was about 5 years old, and I was in my brother's room, and he was playing Led Zeppelin.
Oh, my, yeah.
You know, the first album, and I just remembered how much that really impacted me and blew me away. And I just remember telling my brother, you know, Neil, that's his name, I said, Neil, put that record on again. Play that record again. And he was playing The Animals, The Birds, Led Zeppelin, Santana.
Sure.
He was playing
sure.
Santana, The Beatles, you know. And all of a sudden, I knew by the time I was about 6, 7 years old, I was a music addict. I loved music. And so I started collecting all the 8-track tapes and the records going into my teenage years. And let's see. I'm trying not to backtrack too much here.
Wonderful story.
You know, music, when you are impacted by these great artists out there that have recorded all these wonderful works, you know, whether it's classical, jazz, rock, reggae, disco, R&B, funk, I mean, the list goes on. I mean, it's like it's in your blood. It's like it's in your blood. Why would I go into a store and spend so much money on records or CDs or, you know, whatever? It's because of that fix you get out of it, that therapy, if you will, you get out of it. And so my family, my actual, my mom's side of the family has a very, very strong arts background. For lack of better words, it's not really the word I'm looking for, but a love for arts. That's what I
often lose words
to. A love
too.
For art. And yeah. So my brother was a painter, a world class painter in Europe, and he also taught. Not my brother. Pardon me. My uncle, and he painted and taught art in the United States as well as Europe. His my two cousins taught art. My brother was an actor in New York for a number of years, so he had a strong love for theater for pretty much most of his life. He's loved that art form. My mom had a strong love for English, and teaching English and writing is really an art form in of itself, you know, if you think about it. And I've always had a love for kind of the dramatic arts, and also a love for music. And art, you know, simply put, art affects the soul, it affects the heart. And music is so much a part of that, you know.
Rick, I highly admire the way you use the word love. You indicated that you love the music. Was one of the first time you used the word love was that you love the music, and it's very clear to me that you mean that. You know, the word love has been watered down to the point that you might mean you just love chocolate ice cream, but you're talking about a very different a movement of the spirit. And it's interesting to me too. You mentioned the theater. You apparently studied drama. Were you in plays in the 80s also?
Yeah, a little bit.
Well, tell us about that.
Yeah.
We're very curious around here.
Yeah, yeah. Let me see. Well, it was inspired to me to go to get further education. I mean, basically, my parents knew that in the late 70s and early 80s that I had problems with drugs. And they didn't like to see where my life was headed. I ultimately didn't like seeing where my life was headed. I was very lucky to even have a roof over my head during all of that. Anyway, I just remembered at one point my mom being very inspiring and saying, you know, you need to go back to school, get your high school education completed, and go to college. And so when I ended up getting high school finished and then going on to college, the first thing that really was attractive to me more than anything else, what the music thing was attractive to me, and I was already doing that, but I wanted to do something different as well, so I just decided to get involved in drama. And so I did school plays and took a bunch of classes. Later on in life, I continued to study drama via the Sanford Meisner approach to drama, because that's a whole other kind of area of theater that I find very attractive and interesting to me. But I would say I've only been in a total of maybe about 10 amateur plays in my lifetime.
Well, the fact that you the word you said and it was echoed by our production chat. They were very impressed by it, and so was I. That you used the phrase "English is an art form," and that's a very telling line. And I happen to agree with you, as do many of the folks who listen to this show. What was your favorite play that you read? What was the favorite part? What was that like?
You mean, are you asking me what was the favorite play that I was in? Or
yeah, even if it was in school or while you were doing the drama classes, what was your favorite part or role and why, maybe?
Oh, okay. This is really embarrassing, but
No,
you're going to crack up.
No, it's priceless, actually.
Okay, one of the first plays that I was ever in at school, when I was going to school at that time, I can't even remember the name of it. I think it's going to come to my mind. But basically, it was a play. I can describe what the play was about. That's no problem. And
well, I'll tell you what,
I'll remember again.
What we could do is you could actually have some time to think about it. What we should probably do is to get to some of the music. We'll both have time to think about that. Because there's so much of it, we always like to know it about the people that come on the show, because you know, if people come on and you just play the music or just talk about what you've done, it's kind of meaningless until you have some connection to a person's heart. And I feel like we have done that. I feel that you. Remarkable person. You have the same list of mixes that I do. What would you have us listen to as the first exposure to many of us to your music?
Boy, that's a tough one. I can certainly go on my computer screen and look at that updated email that you sent me that shows the different samplers. My first and look at those and I guess assess that. My first gut, Peter, is just my first gut as an option is just to say to you, why don't you just put on whatever you feel you want to put on as one of the samplers. I can make that choice if you want me to. It's up to you.
Well, actually, I do. Now, I haven't heard this, but I know the titles, and I think literally I'm really an emotional kind of guy. Literally, when I dug deeper into the track list, some of them it just brought tears to my eyes. You know, some of the memories associated with some of these, and it's your number four. It's a 24 minute mix, which begins with George Benson and goes all the way through Vogue.
Okay.
Give Me the Night down through a Dance in the Night Away, just a stunning collection of music. How does that sound?
Hey, it sounds to me like you're right on the same page. It sounds
good. Okay. Bless your heart. Well, let's go ahead then, and folks, we're about to hear. And by the way, DJ RXMX, before we run this, tell us what is RXMX?
I came up with for lack of better words, it's kind of a derivative of that. In the late '80s, and I came up with Rick's Mix. That's kind of a cheesy invention there.
But I
kind of liked it a little bit because it's like you got a mix and it's being done by Rick, so it's Rick's Mix.
Absolutely, so absolutely.
And I eventually had it as R-I-X space M-I-X. And I just decided sometime later to change that to R-X-M-X because it makes a little bit, there's a little more mystery to it in a way. It looks a little better. So that's kind of where that comes from.
Well, it actually works very well because it was immediately the point of curiosity when I was first exposed to it. So it does what when a DJ is, you have to like get the word out there. It's something you remember, and so it does cause a pause for curiosity. So it's well done. So folks, you're about to hear something incredible, and it is our newest DJ friend, Mr. Rick Ashmum, who hails from Seattle, the Emerald City, and it is a 24-minute mix set. Number four, please, Bob.
So come on, girl, and hold. chain reaction. We'll see the people of the world coming out to dance, 'cause there's music in the air and lots of loving everywhere. So give me the night. Give me the night. So come on out tonight, and we'll leave the others on a ride to paradise. And if you feel alright, then we can be lovers, 'cause I see that starlight look in your eyes. And don't you know we can fly? Just give me the night. Girl,
We'll be right back.
Rick, absolutely wonderful stuff, and I must apologize to you and all of the listeners. The studio had a serious meltdown with the player, that particular player. We have several others, and any additional music that we run tonight will not be run on that machine. I'm so sorry. I was horrified that happened. I'm so sorry. What I wanted to comment on, though, is the beautiful transition in styles. The George Benson style has a very distinct flavor to it. It has a very particular sound. And then as you followed it up with the Michael Jackson tracks, which, by the way, are wonderful, and many of us remember those as some of his very best work, was a great transition to fight. It just seems to me you could have never gone from Love Times Love and Give Me the Night directly into Geraldine Hunt. That would have been a disaster. But to use Michael Jackson between, I think, was genius.
Right on.
It seems to me that, well, I sincerely mean it, it seems to me the Geraldine Hunt through the Vogue, by the way, Dance in the Night Away has always been one of my very favorite tracks.
Mine too.
Yeah, that's and not to mention This Time, Baby, You Can't Fake the Feeling. It seems to me in hearing those that what I'm hearing is that you really find your ground or your natural element in between the Geraldine Hunt and the Vogue. I'm saying that it's all fabulous, but if I had to guess what your favorite style was, it would be the Geraldine Hunt through Vogue. Am I wrong?
Yeah, that's interesting you mentioned that. You're asking, is that part of it one of my favorite styles? Is that what you asked?
Well, one or even your very favorite. The way it was crafted just made me feel that perhaps that was your favorite style. I'm wondering how wrong I might be.
Well, no, as I said, that I'm tickled you put it that way. One way that I would respond to that is just by saying what you've heard, that sample of mix set, which the original mix set is approximately 50 minutes long, what you just heard there is, I will confess, it is classic Monastery. That's the kind of stuff the Monastery played. I mixed it, but when I particularly made that mix set, the Monastery was a big inspiration. Dancing the Night Away, the Jackie Moore song, the Geraldine Hunt song, those in particular, that's classic, I'd say 12 a.m. to 1 p.m. Monastery, you know. But Dancing the Night Away, I'm with you on that. That song to me is a masterpiece.
Well, in my mind, too, you can't top a lyric like Saw You on the Dance Floor, you know, telling me you wanted more. I mean, good Lord, it's fabulous. But it's not at all cheesy. It's just beautifully done.
I know. I agree. I really agree with you on that. And Dancing the Night of the Way, that was a signature Dana Andrews song. He loved playing that. And any time that song was played, it was guaranteed you would dance. You would dance to that one.
Well, it's beautiful. And now I'm beginning to get the idea of what you were referring to earlier when you were saying that the traditional, and I think we could probably call that culture, that time period, the Dance in the Night Away and This Time, Baby, I guess we might call that traditional and in some sense, mixed with some different styles, for instance, the George Benson. Now I think I'm beginning to understand what was done. Am I getting that correctly? Is that what you're doing there?
Yeah, you know, I'd say they played, mentioning the Monastery, I'd say that they played a little bit of George Benson. They would play George Benson when people were ready for a little bit a little bit of a break from the fast thumps, the predictable cuts that would be played at the church at times. And by the way, the church was a nickname given to the Monastery. That's what we all called it. Are you going to the church tonight? Oh yeah, I'll be at the church. but George Benson was kind of like Give Me the Night in particular. That was a song that would be played once in a while, but it would be played not only because it was a masterpiece on the radio at that time, but it was played also because it was a nice, more of a jazzy dance tune, you know, just adding to a little bit more variety versus just hearing constant, constant funky disco and constant boom, boom, boom disco. So it George Benson wasn't played a lot there, but when it was always nice to hear him.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah, that sounds so. And you're right, that you wouldn't expect to always hear George Benson on a dance floor. Nonetheless, those were two beautifully done tracks, and quite appropriate. And I can see where all of those fit in. Boy, those were the days, weren't they? We have a caller on the line for you. Rick, we have Victor, VJC, is on the phone. Welcome to the show, Victor. It's good to have you back.
Hi, Pete. It's been a while.
It has been a while. I've missed the sound of your voice saying hello.
Hello, it's VJC. You know where I got that hello from, Peter? Obviously, I know it's Rick's show. How you doing, Rick?
Hey, what's going on, buddy?
Okay, real quick, to why I say hello. It's I got it from here in New York. A great DJ by the name of Roscoe. Obviously, he passed away here in from a station called KTU years ago. He used to always start his show. He says, "Hello, it's Roscoe." I mean, he was so smooth. So that's in memory of Roscoe from back in the day. That's just why I say Roscoe. You know, why I say hello.
That's the Rick. Anyway, we have a thing about the way he says hello. Go ahead.
Well, anyway, the thing is that what I just wanted to chime in the fact that I called. Obviously, I didn't call. Rick called me about an hour before the show. We were talking about the mixes and this and that. So, and I was hearing the show so far, and he's been very, very astute of the mixes of the. Talking about the groups and the artists and all that, Rick knows his stuff. And also why I'm calling is because Bobby Vittoretti was obviously the guy who turned me on to Rick and the Multiply site, and that's how I got to meet Rick and then called him, and we've been talking the last month or so, and he's been sending his mixes and mixes from Dana Andrews. And I've been featuring them on my station, Disco 93.5, and it's just a pleasure to be, listening to Dana's mixes, even though he passed away, and also Rick's mixes, because you get a variety of different types of DJs, doing it different styles, and it's a great accomplishment for Rick for doing these type of mixes, so. I mean, I'm a little tired because obviously it's 10 o'clock here in New York and over there it's 7 o'clock in Seattle.
I'm wide awake, Victor. I'm wide awake over here.
Yeah, and I'm half asleep here. It's like 10 degrees here in New York. I'm like trying to keep awake. it's funny, about a half hour ago I called in and I spoke to Bob Kincare, and he told me it was just about the mix was about to go on the air, and I said, "Well, okay, I'll try to hold on." And I was like, "Oh man, I almost crashed out," but I was hearing the mix, and it's like I said, it was a great mix that you put together, which the R&B flavored, and then you went back into a little bit of a jump of a high energy mix, which entails to me, since I'm a DJ, I mean it shows the variety of the different flavors that you can go into instead of just keeping on to to the high end beats or the low end beats. So, like you've been telling Peter throughout the show, how DJ is supposed to keep the flow of different time zones. In other words, you start the show early, start in the middle, and then bring it down towards the end. So basically, that's what you try to do. But it depends on the crowd and depends on the veneer where you're playing at. I hope I'm sounding all right because I'm half asleep.
Victor, you always sound fine. It wouldn't matter really. We would listen to you all night, no matter what you said. Really, we just love the voice.
Well, also I had a couple of drinks before I got on the air with you guys, so I'm a little tipsy. So it's like, okay, am I sounding okay? So I had to put down the bottle before I got on the air again, because if I don't, I won't even think I know what I'm saying.
Well, Victor, I have to agree with you. In fact, I had not heard that particular mix, but one of the things that brought my eye to it and to suggest that we ran that one first was because, in fact, it did start with George Benson. Then you see Jackie Moore and Boys Town Gang and Vogue and Geraldine Hunt at the end of it, and you go, how did he go from there to there? You know, it was beautifully done, in my estimation.
Right. So he has that. That's his way of putting mixes together, in which is that's his own way of showcasing his talents, which is great, because you don't want to have a DJ just, you know, copy from one other DJ and say, well, you know, it sounds the same. So it's great to hear different types of different mixes. And that's what I enjoy about when I have different DJs, you know, mix for me on Disco 93.5. You know, obviously with Bobby and the rest of the gang and, you know, Rick. And I mean, I have a host of DJs coming aboard the last month or two or so. It's like I've lost count of how many DJs I have. And that's why, I mean, I told Rick, I'm trying to showcase the different varieties of DJs and their styles. That's what it's about, you know, and then try to bring the types of the obscure disco that's not really played on the radio stations here in the States. And that they continue to play. And I spoke to Rick an hour ago before the show, and what it is that they don't play this obscure stuff. They continue to play the top 40 rehash stuff for the last 40 years. I mean, you know, the Donna Summer, the Gloria Gaynor, the Village People. You know, I mean, it's great stuff. You know, Casey Sunshine Band. But how many times must we hear, you know, I Will Survive? I mean, come on. You know,
we get to hear it until we scream, we wish you'd die.
Right, exactly. Because the fact of the matter is that it's these big corporations. I think I've spoken to you about this many times when I've been on in the past. The big corporations, it's about the almighty dollar. It's about, you know, the revenue, about bringing in the ad dollar. It's about, you know, that's what it's about. It's not really about the music. It's about jukebox radio. I mean, that's what it's about. it's all bullshit.
I like that.
It's bullshit. Anyway, I don't want to more time, because it's Rick's show. It's not my, you know, I mean, obviously, like I told you before, I mean, I just wanted to chime in, just to call in to say that, Rick, I'm here listening. And so far, the last hour I've been hearing, especially your mix, it's off the hook. And you know, and your show so far, it's very knowledgeable about what you're talking about, the mixing and back in the days in the 70s and 80s. It's great listening to you. You're very knowledgeable. You know what you're talking about. You're not one of these fly by DJs. And I could tell you know your shit.
Well said. And it's internet radio. You can say that here. That's
real helpful. Okay, Rick. So, you know, continue the show. I'm going to be continuing listening. Like I said, it's for me, it's like past my bedtime, but I'm going to continue to listen to 11 o'clock. And, you know, I will be, Peter, I will be sending you some more mixes for the...
Wonderful. Wonderful. And
Victor... Right?
Wonderful, and we're adding Rick to the rotation for the gay bar across the street soon, so he'll be joining us. We have a couple of new wonderful, yeah, we do.
Okay,
a couple of new DJs.
You know, hey, welcome to the party.
Exactly. Thank you.
Right.
Thank you for calling, Victor.
Okay,
it's always
Rick,
good to hear from you.
Continue the show, and I'll be talking to you.
All right, sir. Hey, good evening to you.
Thanks, Victor.
Rick, you have to wonder what would happen if people were to hear something like Dancing the Night Away or This Time Baby on current radio. I think some jaws would drop. First of all, it would be absolutely new music. And second of all, it's so catchy that it couldn't help but soar. One wonders whatever happened to the music. You know, there's something I'm noticing here, Rick, which is very intriguing to me. One of your mix sets, and this is mix set number 5, it's a 16-minute set. Now, we understand that you've mixed the tracks together, but I'm also seeing that the 2 Tons of Fun track, Earth Can Be Just Like Heaven, is you've actually remixed, you actually remix individual tracks also, then, do you?
You know, I do very little official remixing. I hope I'm answering your question right. But I do very, very little official, so to speak, remixing. I do a little tiny bit of it. But, like, for example, on that sample, that, and I hope we get to play that. I'm hoping so too.
Definitely.
Yeah, in fact, I'm thinking number five would be a good one to put on the sampler number five, 16 minutes, which is kind of a sampling of a much longer mix. That right there, where it says RXMX remix, that's just kind of partly an on-the-fly remix done within the overall mix set.
Oh, I got you.
That's all that is. And if something is, you know, has some kind of a level to it that just about or pretty much constitutes a remix, then I'll just put that in there. I'll say RXMX remix, because I am the one that remixed it. But the overall goal is just a straight up mix set. But in that case, there, I think when you listen to it, it'll come at you as a simple remix, and it's not over the top whatsoever. So I don't know if that answers your question, but I know that I don't have an individual track.
I understand.
It was kind of more of an on the fly within the overall mix. Does that
and
make
sometimes,
sense? So really,
yes,
really
it does.
What it is, Peter, really what it is if you want to hear that particular remix, the only way you're going to hear that is on that mix set. And if I recall correctly, that sample, that 16-minute sample, comes from, I'd have to look up the name of that mix set. I can find out. All I got to do is look at a text.
Well, it's a three-track mix. I can give it to you. And one of the reasons I choose the track is what I remember and love. So it's by Isaac Hayes, "Don't Let Go."
I'm looking at the sample, where that sample comes from. That's part of a longer mix that I believe runs about 50 minutes or so, and I'm gonna find that so you can just know for the heck of it what the name of the extended 15-minute mix is called, if that makes sense.
Yes, it makes sense. But before we get into number five, we have a legend on the line, and we're always honored when someone of the caliber of Mr. Bobby Vittoretti calls the show. And, Rick, you have Bobby Vittoretti on the line. Bobby, welcome to Strictly Confidential.
Hi, Peter. Hi, Rick.
Hi, Bob.
Hi there.
How you doing? Is this gay bar in Tampa across the street? Man, you got a lot of DJs down there.
We fly them in, actually, Bobby, from all over.
I would love to come down there and do a whole night, you know, an after-hours gig instead of just 20 damn minutes. How long do you get?
Well, according to the paparazzi, Bobby, you have been seen there from time to time at gay bar.
Yeah, in the DJ booth, sometimes in the parking lot, too, you know, Peter?
Sometimes. One never knows where one's going to be photographed.
Well, no, I'm back there trading records and things. So, listen, I wanted to mention something about, Rick, I see your label there, RXMX. That looks really cool. It looks like a mortar and, what do you call it, a mortar and pestle, you know, what a drugstore has, you know.
I remember those.
Oh, that's on my website.
Yes. Yeah. It makes sense. You know, like a mix.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you think about
the other
part of that logo, and I guess I have full rights to it because I paid for the program that supplied me with that logo. So apparently I do have the right to use that. Copyright that whatever, it's not copyright, but whatever they call it.
Yeah,
I have
really
the legal
cool.
right to actually use it. It comes from Microsoft. But the point is the other thing about what you just said, Bobby, is not just the mix metaphor that you see in it, but also the implication of medicine. You know, being that if you think about it, well presented music, well played music, just music in general that's well thought out, and that's creative and moves your soul, it is like medicine for pain.
Yeah.
You know, so really it's kind of a double whammy metaphor, I think, that logo.
Well, you you said something before, which I'm getting seriously now. You were talking about loving music for the love of music. And I really think, you know, you should always caress music. You know, it's like you should always feature at the right time. I don't think you should play music too often. Otherwise, you burn it out. You shouldn't play music too loud. You know, otherwise you get the wrong effect. You know, there's so many important things about for the love of music. You know, because if you caress it the wrong way, it's going to shatter.
Yeah. By the way, can I just interject just real quickly before I forget?
Sure.
Peter.
Yes, sir.
Peter.
It's a southern thing. I call everybody, sir. Go ahead.
Peter, the mix set that includes the cuts that you just played, it also includes, if you hear the whole thing, it includes, let me see, Searching by Change, Je Suis Music by Cerrone, Never Gonna Say Goodbye by Poussey, and then the last cut being My Baby's Baby by Liquid Gold. I just wanted to answer, I hope I was partly answering your question. The name of that whole mix, it's 45 minutes long. It's called Can't Fake the Feeling, 7982 is the name of it. And I have a code that I use. I have kind of a code that I use for every single one of my mix sets that's put into the title of the mix set. So like the code here, 79.82, what that really means, because every once in a while somebody will ask me, they'll go, you know, what's that number, 7982, mean there? You know, or it could be like, 7781 or 8083. What that simply means? Well, what do you think it means, Peter?
Well, knowing the length, how much time you can put on a CD, I would guess it means 78 minutes and seconds is my guess.
No, no,
it doesn't.
It doesn't mean.
Well, then
it
I have no clue.
The music was.
I'm going to tell you. So, like this, that sample you just took from the mix set, the whole extended mix set, which of course the program doesn't have time to play because you only have short things, samples, you know, of what you play.
Right.
The whole thing is 45 minutes. I have much longer mixes than that, but this particular one is 45 minutes. But the name of it, that I give a name to every mix set that I do, and this one's called Can't Fake the Feeling is the name, and sometimes I'm inspired to use the name of a song that's in the mix itself. You know, other times I come up with kind of a name. But the point is it's called Can't Fake the Feeling 79.82. Bobby,
yes.
What does that mean, the 79.82?
It means the music in it was recorded from it has music from 1979 to 1982. You're featuring
exactly.
Those songs.
Exactly. All those cuts were essentially played during that era. So anytime, and you can see this at my website. I have a few sets that are posted there for people to enjoy. You'll see that there's going to be, generally speaking, with most of them, you'll see that kind of coding system. So people can look at it, if they know, they understand it, they can look at it and go, oh, so those are cuts that were played from 79 to 82. Great.
Well,
so I just wanted to
that.
Add that. Sorry about that, Bobby, but I just wanted Peter to know that before I forgot.
You know what I find? I find like on my web, these tapes I'm featuring on my website, you know, the ones people seem to be really interested in, I sell the Trocadero tapes, you know, I mean, whatever, but they like the old school ones. I call them old school one. I'm up to four now. It's when disco began. People like to hear what happened in 1975, you know?
Yeah.
76. And I'm pulling out some of these tapes. Some of these tapes are so worn out, these reel-to-reels. They're I can't even play them because they'll destroy my reel-to-reel deck.
Right.
Bobby, if I'm not mistaken, we've used a couple. Those are from the Marlin Beach, right?
Yeah.
That were, Yeah, they're fabulous mixes. But you're right, the tapes, we crank up the treble a little bit, and it sounds good as new. They're remarkable.
But you know what? It's strange. Some of them, when I play them, my reel-to-reel starts squeaking. And I looked up the internet, when you have an old reel-to-reel like that, you have to bake it. Otherwise, it will screw up the head and the belt and the mechanism, the transport of your reel-to-reel, because it's very hard on it. So you put it in an oven, the reel-to-reel, at 175 degrees for 6 hours. You flip it over halfway. I'm seriously. And you have to put it in the steel case, not a plastic one, because it'll warp. And once you're done with that, you get your Pro Tools or whatever you're going to have, you play it once, and make sure you play it once, and everything else falls off. And you get all the way through it, and there's your master, you know. And you can see all the crumpled boxing, what is it called, the metallic?
The oxide, metal oxide, yes.
Yeah, metal oxide. It's like all over the place. You just got to blow on it, you know. The heads are filthy, but at least you got a master copy of it. Those are the old BASF tapes.
I'll be darned. Well, that's a tip you don't hear every day, Bobby. That's priceless, yeah.
Yeah, not to take away from your show, Rick, but that was very good. I love that set you did, and especially the one you went into, You're the One. I never thought, you know, that was an incredible mix. Thank you.
I thought so too, Bobby. And Dance the Night Away capped it off as something fabulous.
Of course. Everybody loves
Peter,
that.
Can I say something?
Absolutely. This is your show. It's in honor of you tonight.
Bobby, and I talk about him a little bit at my website, he's my idol. I mean, the guy's still my idol today. And he is, he was a groundbreaker and in my opinion, a pioneer, especially on the West Coast, where, of course, I kind of got my start and where I went to the clubs. And Bobby's music, I mean, it's amazing stuff. Simply put, it's just amazing stuff. Bobby and at the Trucadero, everybody that
I never made it to
the Trucadero to hear Bobby Vinaretti. I know I did, and I never made it down there because I had such a bad drug addiction at the time that I was just incapable of going down to San Francisco. I was my means were limited, and I was really young, and I didn't work at the time. I didn't have a job at the time, but I always felt kind of sick knowing that there was great music being played at this place called the Trucadero, and I never had a chance to go down there. Yeah. But I had heard the tapes, and this was one of the first things that I told Bobby about when Bobby and I finally met, was I told Bobby, I said, you know, Bobby, how I learned about you was a friend of ours many years ago, this was in about 1982, came into this, he was a waiter working in this lounge, and at the time my partner was running a record store, and anyway, this guy came up to us, we were sitting there about ready to eat dinner, and he said, oh, by the way, I just got back from San Francisco, and so we were both curious, and so how did that go, and I can't even remember the guy's name, I can't even remember his name, but I remember his face. But he said, oh, we went to the Trucadero, and I got this mixed tape that Bobby Vinaretti mixed.
Rick, you're blowing my head up.
At the Trucadero. He had actually two tapes. He had two tapes with him, cassettes. And he said, hey, you want to hear him? I can put him on the restaurant tape deck. And we were like, yeah, of course, put those on, because we were absolute disco fanatics at that time, and dance fanatics. And they put him on. He put him on, and I couldn't believe my ears.
Rick is one of my
biggest
fans.
I couldn't believe what I was hearing.
Besides Dana Andrews, which I still have to hear some of his music. I want to hear one of his full tapes because I hear so many good things about Dana Andrews, Rick. You know, I've heard so many good things about him down at Trucadero. Too bad I've never really got a chance to meet him.
Just go to my website, Bobby. There's four different things available.
Okay,
Bobby, stick around and don't go away because we have an additional caller. We're going to try to bring all four of us online at once, and this is Phase Linear Daryl, from Colorado, who wants to join both of you guys. Welcome to the show, Phase Linear.
Hello.
Hello, you're certainly welcome, and we love the name Phase Linear. Boy, that takes us back a page or two. Welcome. You're on the line with Bobby and Rick.
Hi, Rick. Hi, Bobby.
Hi, Daryl.
What's going on, Daryl?
Oh, just calling in. See what's happening.
This guy's a nut. He loves to talk about output transistors on the phase linears, box of
fans. It's really hard for me to hear you guys.
He's like the phase linear queen of...
Phase linear, Daryl, Bob will attempt to raise the volume so that you can hear a little bit better. Well, you're a man after my own heart. I'm always fond of field effect transistors and low noise input circuitry and all that sort of thing. That was one of the things I always loved about the old audio equipment. They actually publish real specs.
I got a comment to make when he gets done.
Yes, sir.
Sorry about that. When Daryl, see, the whole topic got me excited.
I,
when Daryl gets that, done, I've got a comment.
Named myself after the amplifiers that I brought to the monastery back in 1981.
Ah, yes, I remember reading that. Yes, that the monastery used the phase linear. The phase linear amps. I remember reading that. Now, Rick, what were you saying? It's sometimes with four folks in the line, we don't always, but we're pointing to Rick. Go, Rick.
Really, Peter? I actually, Gerald already kind of iterated partly what I wanted to say. What I wanted to say about Daryl is it's very, very possible, if not likely, that had not the sound engineer by the name of Daryl, the guy you're talking to right now, had Daryl not entered the picture during that era, the monastery would not have taken the form that it ultimately took.
I'll be darned. This is the fellow who said it.
As far as I'm concerned, Daryl saved the monastery, and he made the monastery an even better place by coming in and contributing what he contributed to the monastery, and why the dance floor was packed and why that was the best discotheque in the Pacific Northwest at that time. And
I heard the monastery had a fierce sound system. You know?
And then all the discotheques in Seattle ended up with phase linears after I showed up.
This is an amazing story.
Neighbors,
so you're the
Brass Connection, Tonight's the Night, the Oz Club, to name a few.
Yeah.
I think it's Neighbors is the one that I remember from years ago. That it was a huge place, if I recall.
Yeah, that too.
That was the one. Yeah. Yeah. I was in Seattle in the mid 70s.
I want to add something else, Peter. Regarding Daryl, it was amazing, and you're going to have to ask Daryl, by the way, after I shut up here, you're going to have to ask Daryl the story that Daryl told me about how he approached the owner of the club, the owner of the monastery, with his pitch, if you will, in using the phase linear. You have to get Daryl to tell you the story, but before you do, the thing about Daryl bringing in those amplifiers, what's amazing is what those amplifiers did for that club is really quite a story and quite a phenomenon, in my personal opinion. But if you have time, Peter, you know, you might want to ask Daryl about that story.
Well, I'll tell
the story right now. Well, by all means, if you carried the... They were no doubt very, very heavy. You must have brought them in on at least a dolly.
Basically, I walked up to George and told him, "Hey, I have amplifiers that'll blow yours away. Blow yours out of the water." And he says, "Well, until you bring those amplifiers down here, you're out."
Oh, my stars.
Yep. Yeah. And so I said I'd have them there the next day. And, I showed up the next day with a phase linear D500 and two phase linear 700Bs, and they install them in the system, and the amplifier shook the place. like they'd never heard before.
But Daryl, you didn't tell him the other part about how comfortable you made George, the owner, feel. You didn't tell him about that part, about
how comfortable I made him feel.
Yeah, just put it this way. And I'm being sarcastic here because it's completely the opposite, but you complimented George on his previous sound system.
Oh, I said it sounded like shit.
Man,
And that's what got Daryl kicked out. That's what got Daryl kicked out, is he just told him point blank, your sound system, George, sounds like shit.
But sometimes you got to do that. What were the amps they using
back then?
What were they using, Daryl?
Most sound men have speak to each other very viciously like that between bar owners and sound. You know, they have. There's no etiquette involved. You have to use your ears. You know.
Yes. Well, music is everything. What were they using, Daryl? I'm terribly curious. What amps did you kick out for the phase linears?
Oh, the phase linear G500 Series 2.
Yes, sir. And what were they replacing?
700Bs.
Right, but what was the club using at the time when you told them it sounded like
the acoustics 500s for the sub bass?
Oh, yes, that was considered high end equipment. If I recall, wasn't that something they used to mention in like Audiophile magazine, or is that or is that not?
Well, actually, it was a spinoff from Phase Linear.
I see.
You're thinking of Spectrasonic.
I see. It's vaguely familiar, isn't it? Yeah.
Spectrasonic is like multi-thousands of dollars. Spectroacoustics
Peter,
between $500 to $700 each.
Yeah, Peter, do you know the other reason why the monastery was known for having one of the best sound systems in the country? Do you know the other reason why?
Well, here's my guess. Having been there on that one occasion when I was visiting Seattle during the 70s, my guess would be the suspended turntables.
No. I'll tell you what it is, and Daryl, hopefully Daryl will agree with me because he's been an expert in sound design for a number of years. Simply put,
the inside
acoustics.
Has some special installation.
Yeah, the acoustics. The acoustics in the church were phenomenal. Just phenomenal. Basically, they had George had a layer of foam. I don't know how thick that layer
was.
It was
fireproof foam. It looked like styrofoam, kind of.
Yeah, and it was sprayed throughout entire and most of the interior of the dance floor area, and it's this church, so the ceiling is very high, very high. And just even the shape of the interior. Anyway, with that foam in there, the acoustics were unreal, Peter.
Well, the solidity of the building, having it was made out of stone. If I recall, the whole thing was made out of stone. Is that right?
It was all wood.
Yeah, I thought it was wood, too.
Well, it was night when I went. Somehow wood and stone looked the same that evening. I can't quite explain.
Now, the parking lot, that was asphalt.
Hey, listen, guys, I have to go, okay? And I'll let you continue. Maybe your audio will get a little louder, Daryl. I really can't hear you that good over here. But
I'm sorry. We sometimes, when we get several callers on, sometimes the... there are equalization issues, and Bobby, thank you so much for joining the show. Is this Daryl?
Okay.
I'm Daryl. Bobby's still on the line too.
Yeah, Daryl, you take care. I'm going to go. Bye, Rick. Congratulations.
Okay, bye, buddy.
Thank you for.
Okay, bye, bye.
Thank you for calling.
Peter.
Yes, sir. I'm here.
If I can inspire you to not forget, of course you're the host of the show, but if I can inspire you to not forget to, hopefully you'll play a sampler, I think it's number 5.
Number 5, and what we'll need to do actually is begin that immediately. We may have to fade just before the end. But I agree with you. I'd love to hear sampler 5, and if that's okay with both of you and Bob, I think that we have. Yeah, Bob says it will fit. Let's go ahead and run 5. This is the one with the Isaac Hayes and Jacksons and Two Tons of Fun. Thank you, Rick. Let's roll five.
Did we lose Bobby? We'll be right back.
Oh, okay, dude, they're going to interview me. I got to let you go. Okay.
And welcome back, Rick. Rick, thank you so much for correcting the studio on the incorrect track. It seems like we have gremlins tonight, and thank you for saving the day. I knew it was wrong, but there was nothing I could do to correct it because the headphones it would have been done on the air. So thank you. You saved the day. Rick, what a remarkable guest you have been. And I must tell you that one of the things was happening to say to production while I have a production chat that runs separate from the main, was that, my Lord, I would hate to be interviewed by me. You did a wonderful job. You really did a wonderful job of handling all of the questions. I have certainly enjoyed having you here on the show this evening.
Likewise, Peter. I was just telling somebody a moment ago, you're a fantastic interviewer. You really are. Can I get you to just mention my website?
Absolutely, and it needs to be mentioned again. We have published it in chat, and folks, that is djrxmx.multiply.com. And also, Rick is going to be joining our Gay Bar Across the Street rotation this coming week. And we'll be, Rick, announcing your website every evening that you play.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Feel free to use as much as you want. Peter, you're great. You're a fun guy to talk to. Seriously.
Well, you are indeed a remarkable person with great depth. And I have thoroughly enjoyed not only the music, but the talk of what loving music means. I think that that was a great, and in fact, you brought it to the show. You brought that with you, and thank you so much.
You're totally welcome.
And we hope to have you back again. Would you do that, Sunbay?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Well, then we'll get in touch with you, and that is a definite. We will definitely have Rick back. Rick, good evening to you. That is Rick Ashmum at djrxmx.multiply.com. And, folks, we are pushing the end of the hour, and thank you for joining us. What a remarkable guest. What remarkable callers. Here's Cynthia Manley reminding you, too.
The best music happens when the sheet music gets put aside and the gang just sits down and jams. Same thing here on The Horn, America's best liberal talk hosts free-forming together for an hour a night. Welcome to The Horn Section.